Well, I'm home in Australia, so that is a long way from the other side of the world. It's a long way from sitting in Bellagio in Italy drinking red wine through to sitting in the backyard in Australia drinking herbal tea out of the Troy Cup. So that's a, oh my life. How quickly things do change. Anyway, so where are we? Here back in Australia, I'm visiting my mum and dad at the moment, so I'm sitting in the back of their garden, which is particularly picturesque. It's actually been raining here. I got back and it was like, why is everything so dry? Australia tends to basically be either on fire or underwater or possibly in the middle of a cyclone. It always tends to be sort of one of these things. So I got back at sort of the fiery part of it. Like literally we've had bushfires and so on here. Now it's just been dumping rain all day. Apparently it's like half of the October rainfall just in one day. So yeah, anyway, back to normal, I guess. Mostly normal until tomorrow. Tomorrow being Sunday, I am actually recording this a day late. Tomorrow I'm heading down to Sydney to do the NDC Sydney event. So I will actually be doing my Hack Yourself First workshop for the first time actually since I did it at NDC in Oslo in June, which feels like probably the longest gap I've ever had between doing workshops, but hey, I've been busy. So I'll be down at NDC in Sydney doing that. I will also be doing a talk. What am I talking about? Hack to the Future. That's what it was. Oh, jeez. I've got to prepare that talk. So I will be doing that talk in Sydney for NDC, I think, on Wednesday. And I'll be doing a bunch of other things in Sydney while I'm there as well, because there are always a bunch of things to do. So that is my coming week. Now, got a list of things here. Not big things this week. There hasn't been a blog this week. I have been kind of busy and traveling. And plus, if you recall, I think I said this last week, but when I was in Bellagio, like I literally wanted to have a bit of downtime. I was there with my parents. I just managed to time in with their visit and my visit. So I kind of tried to do a little bit less. Downtime is a bit of a relative term, if I'm honest, but regardless. So things have happened. I'm coming to you on a brand new phone. So I got an iPhone 11 Pro the other day. Not the Max, just the Pro, which is for all intents and purposes the same size as the XS I had before. Big thing about the Pro being that it has super, super cool cameras. Now, I haven't had much time to play with it, and the coolest of the cameras are on the back of the phone, so it's got sort of the whole wide-angle job, which is probably the biggie there. A whole bunch of other cool sort of photo features I've just started to play with, particularly sort of doing things with the kids. Having portrait mode on the front was kind of cool. Not that I want to do selfie portraits, but I was playing around with my daughter before and we're having a bit of fun. So yeah, a bunch of new stuff on it. The low light is actually really, really good. So the low light camera is the biggest thing where I've just gone, all right, that is actually really nice. So I was pretty impressed with that. I don't know if anyone notices a whole lot of difference here with the videos. I think having like all the bright sky as well, overcast, but relatively bright. I don't know if it makes a massive amount of difference, but it's something. Face ID does feel a bit snappier. It is meant to be faster to authenticate. And I have a checkered history with Face ID. I mean, I was very supportive of it just before it came out a couple of years ago from the premise of, I think biometrics for the most part are very good for many, many reasons. Go and Google my name if you're not sure why I would think that. I think Face ID in particular, given the difficulty of spoofing it, is especially good. I just found that it was a bit unreliable. Gen 1 in the iPhone 10, I guess it's going to be a bit unreliable. In fact, I did a blog post about how Face ID stinks. And I showed how particularly here in Oz, when it's really bright, and particularly when you're wearing sunglasses a lot as well, and I suspect polarized sunglasses may make it even worse, which I tend to wear because I'm on the water a lot, it just wasn't real good. XS was definitely better. 11 seems to be even better again. So far, positive feedback, but there's obviously nothing in there which is like, wow, this is an amazing new phone sort of thing. That is not this phone. Now, moving on to things. Oh, man, I upset people again. I don't intentionally go out there to upset people, if I'm honest, most of the time. But this one, this was a really, really odd one. Now, I'm going to, you know what I'll do? I'll explain the experience I had and the intention of the tweet. And then we can talk about the responses to it and how some of them are okay and some of them are frankly just a little bit nutty. So because I travel a lot, I do have different experiences with accessing websites in different parts of the world. And the one that has been a little bit of a constant theme since May last year, and some of you can probably see where this is starting to go, is that I'm very often in Europe. Very often. Well, okay, I am often in Europe, but often when I'm in Europe, I occasionally go to a link, say on Twitter, or I think in this case I'd actually gotten a Google Alert because I have Google Alerts set up for key things that are relevant to me, and I click on the link expecting to read the story, and I get a message saying, I'm sorry, you're in Europe, we can't show you the story. Now, I got one of these when I was in Italy the other day. Now, here is the message here. Now, this also is Kinoshe News, which is apparently some local place somewhere in America. I don't know. I wasn't particularly concerned about that. I just wanted to read the thing. Kenosha. Kenosha. That's probably the way it says pronounced. Kenosha News. 451, unavailable due to legal reasons. Now, incidentally, and I actually did not know this, and I'm willing to admit I did not know this, HTTP 451 is unavailable for legal reasons, which is literally what the title says. Now, what does this say? RFC specified 451 response does not indicate whether the resource exists, but requests for it have been blocked if the resource has been removed for legal reasons and no longer exists. The status code was formally proposed in 2013 following earlier informal discussions in 2008. So relatively new. Now, there is a point here, and this gets to the hard where I'm going. This is the Wikipedia explanation of a 451. After introduction of the GDPR in European Economic Area, many websites located outside started to serve HTTP 451 instead of trying to comply with new privacy laws. Now, let me try and put it like this. When I'm in Europe, and I enjoy being in Europe very much, obviously I'm there a lot, and I click a link to read a story and I get a message like this, that is not a very fun experience. And what I mean by that is it sucks because I wanted to read the story. That's why I clicked on the link. And then I get this message and it's kind of sucky. And I tweeted and I said, there's a lot of stuff I love about Europe, but seeing this sort of thing is not one of them. Now, that to me was a pretty face value statement. This experience is not fun. You know, when you go to access something on the internet and because of your location, you're not allowed to access it. We're in Australia. We have to deal with this kind of crap the whole time. Every time we try and watch a movie in America or some streaming service that we're not allowed access to, that's not a fun experience either. That's got privacy and copyright laws and all sorts of things like that. This, of course, is due to GDPR. Now, this is where all hell started to break loose. And just to be clear as well, 320 likes on this, so a lot of people obviously thought it was relevant. But immediately, all these people sort of got into... I'll give you a perfect example. Top response here. How is it Europe's fault if the website decided to be non-compliant with GDPR and blocks European traffic to avoid possible legal issues? Or maybe is GDPR unreasonable? Okay, that's a fair question. Not sure Europe has much to do. A lot of people saying, you know, don't blame Europe. Now, to be totally clear, this wasn't to apportion blame anywhere. It's just to say, when I am on my phone and I click a link and I try to read a story and I can't read the story, that's not a very nice user experience. Face value, that's it, end of story. Now, unfortunately, then, of course, people start peeling back the layers and implying that either I don't like privacy or I think GDPR sucks or it's really the website's fault, all this sort of thing. And there's really a couple of ways of looking at this. And to me, I think this is one of these cases where we say there are different viewpoints to this and you can choose the narrative that suits you. Now, I frankly sit a little bit in the middle of the fence on this whole sort of thing. I'd much rather sort of look at everyone's perspective on this and so be it. It really has very little impact on me other than that. And, of course, the one viewpoint here, and this came over time and time and time and time again, is what kind of shitty stuff is this website doing that they can't be GDPR compliant? Now, there's an easy answer to this. I don't know, right? Like, that's the only answer I can give you. I don't know. Is it because they wanted to do egregiously bad tracking, which was non-GDPR compliant? That is a possibility. Is it because they didn't want to go through the process of any sort of formal assessment of compliance? That is also a possibility. I noticed a couple of people starting to argue in the thread about how much effort was involved in compliance or not. you know, maybe that is it. They just didn't want to go through the compliance program. There's also a very... Actually, let's figure out where this place is, because it's probably going to be relevant. Kenosha, there's people listening to this right now going, how on earth don't you know where this is? It's somewhere in America. Wisconsin. Let's have a look at where this is. And this is relevant, because I want to see how big the place is as well. Oh, here we go. Kenosha, Wisconsin. So, Kenosha, Wisconsin, it has... it's a city with a population of about 100,000 people, which, if memory serves me correctly, normally, at least in Australia, to be a city, you have to have about 100,000 people. So let's call it a small city. So it's a small city. This is a local newspaper. I would imagine that their demographic isn't particularly heavily weighted towards the European side of things. So they may well have just said, look, the burden imposed on us in order to be GDPR compliant, let's not kid ourselves, there is a burden to comply with any sort of regulation like this, does not sufficiently justify the investment for the return we get on it, because the return is basically we want local people reading our local news. Now, this is just a hypothesis, right? It seems to be a reasonable hypothesis. So, you know, the first part of this, again, is this assumption. By the way, there's just a heap of birds and wildlife here, so if you hear funny stuff, that's what it is. If I get kangaroos, and I do often get kangaroos here, I'll turn the camera around. Be something a bit different. Certainly different to last week's video. All right, so there is this sort of position that people took, position one, which is that they're doing, you know, shitty privacy things. It's not clear. And not only that, but I guess a bit of the issue I have with that is that I've got to be really careful. We'll get flamed for this. It is a news site where you just read content. It is not a site where I'm going to provide personal information such as my name and my email address and the color of my kid's eyes or whatever else it may be. And the reason I say I'll get flamed for this is people say, but your IP address is personal information. By the way, you could have tracking cookies and things like that. And look, yes, you're absolutely right about all those things. And if I was worried enough about that, I would do what I normally do at home, which is run something like a pie hole, and I would just simply block all this stuff at DNS, or I'd run an ad blocker, or I'd block that in other ways. So for me, I would much rather have the choice, and this is sort of one of the second points here, I would much rather have the choice to be able to go to a site like that, and if privacy of things like tracking is important enough to me, I will choose to block it. There's something that just sits uncomfortably with me when the choice is taken away from a great big part of the world. I was in Italy as someone who, at that point in time, was in the Economic European Union. I don't like the idea of having that choice taken away from me. It's like, I can't read this. If I hop on a plane and come home, I can read it, which is just... It's just kind of crazy when a lot of the sentiment of GDPR is about giving people control, yeah, predominantly of their personal data, and then going, okay, well, let's just take that control away from the ability to go and read a news site here, so we're literally chopping off part of the world. This whole idea of sort of dividing down the world never, ever feels good to me. Now, of course, the other argument that came across many times, and again, I'm going to remain neutral on all this, I'm just going to sort of explain the viewpoints. The other argument is, it's their website, they can do whatever they want with it. And this is true, right? They literally can decide to block parts of the world. They can decide to do that. If they feel that there's a part of the world that has a law that for whatever reason they don't want to comply with and it's easier just to block people out of that, then that is their prerogative to do that. And if you don't like it, don't use it. Oh, by the way, if you don't like it, you're probably in Europe, you can't use it anyway. So I'm just not quite sure how some of the comments were just nasty. You know, like some of the responses to him were like, oh, you don't care about privacy. You know, I'm really appalled or ashamed that you have this view. So, all I wanted to do is just read a news story because I was mentioned in it. Like, that is literally all it was. As many people said, I could fire up a VPN. I have Freedome on all my devices. It would have been a click away, no problems. You could go to archive.org and you could just pull it from there. I mean, it's such a weak defense to do what they're doing anyway. And I just kind of, look, If I'm honest, I was bored on the plane a bit. I didn't have enough bandwidth to get much more than tweets, so I did engage a little bit, but it just seemed like one of those crazy, pointless things. Anyway, I'll link to the tweet. You can have a read of it. Hopefully people now know the sentiment. I'm not at all anti-privacy. I'm just anti-shitty user experience, and that was it, face value. All right, so that one. Here's another controversial one. This was today. Man, this... How are we going to tackle this? So, I have, on occasion, made some comments about extended validation and more generically about visual indicators in browsers. And there's really extensive, almost unanimous consensus that visual indicators in browsers, as they relate to security, don't really do a lot of good. there are those in the industry who have many vested interests in trying to promote the use of visual indicators. Now, as that relates to extended validation, there has obviously been the whole concept of EV certificates. As DV certificates have become free and ubiquitous via the likes of Let's Encrypt, not the only ones as well. We've got, who are they? The Norwegian one. I keep forgetting them. I'm going to remember in a moment. It'll drive me nuts. Anyway, the other ones. And also, in fairness, the likes of Sectigo and many others have had free DV certs for some time as well. Let's Encrypt obviously does the whole Acme thing and makes it very, very easy. Flytoget's the train. I think I'm still jet-lagged. Anywho, so there's the external validated indicators. Now, of course, commercial CAs have had a vested interest in selling those certificates because they've no longer been able to sell DV certificates because... This is bugging me so much. I'm literally Googling Norwegian Certificate Authority. Stupid. I even met up with these guys or saw their stand at the Java Zone event just the other day. Bypass. Thank you. Sorry. Okay, I can let that go now. Bypass. And Bypass was what I remember because they also implement Acme protocol, which makes it really easy to sort of flick between them and Let's Encrypt. Anywho, the whole EV thing, commercial CAs have a very, very strong financial incentive to push the use of EV certificates. Now, that does create perverse incentives by any reasonable definition. And the perverse incentive is they want to sell more of these things and they want to promote them more because then they'll make more money. They will find studies and research. Let me just air quote this. Studies and research to explain why you should go and buy their EVs. Now, it's not just the certificate authorities. There are other parties out there as well that have vested commercial interests in people believing that an extended valid or some sort of visual indicator in the browser is somehow going to give them more security. Now, one of these is MetaCert. Now, I was looking at MetaCert recently because I got a bunch of comments on my blog which started just going down this really argumentative, unconstructive path to the point where I sort of went, okay, look, this is going off the rails. I think I actually linked to I've got a policy around commenting on my blog, and it basically says once it gets argumentative and you're just here trying to argue the same shit over and over and over again, I'll get to the point where I kill the discussion, which basically means just blocking the person, simply because it's my blog. You know, I can't do that on Twitter. I can't stop them from commenting because I'm just a guest there. But when it's my blog, you're a guest there. So anyway, there's this metacert.com website. What's their pricing here, actually? How do they actually monetize this? They have a visual indicator in the browser to indicate whether the site is safe or not. Why does it all get customized quotes? Teams and business. 5+ users get customized quote. Enterprise, 50+ users get customized quote. What about personal and family? All right, personal, $3.99 a month. Family, $9.99 a month. Buy this, you'll get a thing in your browser telling you whether the site is safe or not. Now, actually, in fairness to them, if you are invested enough to start spending money in adding an extension to your browser and you're the one deciding to spend the money, then good on you, then do it. And just to be clear, I have no reason to suspect that this doesn't work insofar as you get the indicator when the site is known to be safe. I imagine it's not there or there's some active warning if the site is either malicious or perhaps unknown. I'm fine with that. It is different to the EV proposition, which is a website operator is the one that decides to get that and put it in there, and then you're reliant on all these people who've never ever heard of EV before to decide whether its existence or its absence actually indicates anything useful. So anyway, they, I guess to put it under the same umbrella, have a vested interest in proving that visual indicators work, but fundamentally different context between someone going out and deciding to put it in their own browser versus being shown to everyone who's never even thought about it before. Anyway, the bloke who who's behind this, Paul Walsh, has written a blog post here for the CA Security Council. And now, of course, the CA Security Council is a council that does have a lot of interest in their members actually being able to sell EV certificates. And let's just start going through there. The title of it is The Insecure Elephant in the Room. Now, this came across my radar because I saw a bunch of people pointing to it on Twitter just going, this is absolutely ridiculous. And then I had to go and have a look at it to realise what's happened. And there's a lot of stuff on here about the rate of phishing. Now, again, keeping in mind, and this is where it's a little bit ambiguous to me, the context, because someone's written it who sells a browser extension for whom individuals already have a vested interest in using it and will look for it, but it's on the CA Council website, and obviously their vested interest is much more around getting websites using EV certificates, which is something that people don't understand because they've never seen it before, simply don't understand the context. So a lot of talk about phishing. Now, phishing probably plays very much into the MetaCert business model. It obviously also plays into the EVCert business model. Loads of stuff here around how much phishing happens and phishing in data breaches. There's a stat here, 93% of data breaches start with phishing. There's a link off to a source here which appears to be the Verizon DBIR, their data breach investigation report, which these guys put together every year. It's a very good report, very evidence-based. The problem is that we're seeing stuff here which just doesn't reconcile. I mean, it's things like there are 1.1 million Aadhaar records, sorry, 1.1 billion Aadhaar records, Aadhaar being the Indian sort of system of centralized identity management, which they use for health records and things like this. You know, 340 million Exactus records breached. This was not from phishing. I know because I have the Exactus data. Have I been pwned? It was an exposed data breach. And in fact, if I go and pull up the exact description of Exactus, and we'll see where this whole thing just absolutely starts to fall apart. Exactus on the Have I Been Pwned page, bam. June 2018, the marketing firm Exactus inadvertently leaked 340 million records of personal data. Now, Vinny Troyer, Nightline Security, thank you, Vinny, discovered this. He sent it over to me as part of Have I Been Pwned. So I'm close enough to the source to know how this happened. Exposed database. Now, somehow, the fact that Exactus left their database publicly facing without a password has somehow justified it being incorporated into a post here under a heading of 93% of data breaches start with phishing. This is bullshit. This has got nothing to do with phishing. If you want to point to the fact that we have a lot of data breaches, then by all means, go and use that. But this has nothing to do with phishing. MyFitnessPal was nothing to do with phishing. Chegg, from memory, was nothing to do with phishing. The Aadhaar situation. Aadhaar's had a lot of dicey stuff about it. Google my name and Aadhaar, you'll get a bit of a sense about it. But as far as I'm aware, there has not been a breach of 1.1 billion Aadhaar records. MetaCert logo on that, just in case you're not sure of, you know, who to look to for the figures. So, all right, that just makes no sense. Say goodbye to online brand reputation is the next heading down here. So there's a bit here about even the colours they used. Basically showing this looks to be Firefox before or up to the current state where EV is still shown and then showing in the future where EV is not shown. And it's like there's a green circle and a green, you know, the tick inside the green circle, identity verified. And then in the future it's red. No identity. Oh, no, it's so terrible. Now, obviously, what this bloke's problem is a lot to do with the fact that a lot of people blame Google for this. We've got to remember, we've got to go back to Apple and Safari last year in 2018. Apple and Safari killed off the EV indicator in iOS. And they also killed it off in Safari, I think, when Mojave hit last year. And then, of course, Google killed it off in Chrome last month. And then, of course, Mozilla's killing it off in Firefox this month. It's almost like all of these independent browser vendors all came to the same conclusion that the visual indicator was absolutely useless. And they did, and there's peer-reviewed studies and all sorts of evidence. So it's gone, but people just can't let it go. And they keep pulling this stuff up and going, see, you don't have identity verified. You can't trust it anymore. So there's a lot of ranting about stuff which, like, it's dead. Like, just let it go. There's a whole bunch of stuff here around why current solutions aren't enough. Now, to be clear, we do have a phishing problem. Like, let's not sort of gloss over that. There is a phishing problem. The argument is not about whether there's a phishing problem or not. We don't need figures to substantiate that there's a phishing problem. The argument is whether visual indicators have any impact on it whatsoever. Now, according to three very significant browser vendors, no. What else is in here? Because some of this is just a little bit weird. Doesn't Google Safe Browser API solve this problem? Of course, and I haven't even read all the details in the Safe Browser section here. It's not going to solve the problem. It's not going to solve it in any sort of binary state. It impacts the problem. And you can debate about how long it takes stuff to get into safe browsing. Once it's in safe browsing, of course, at least in Chrome, everything goes red. I would argue very strongly that that is a very impactful security control for people. But it's got to get in there in the first place. So what else we got in here? Why we need to empower people? The padlock is putting users in danger. See, it's all the padlock's fault. When a user opens a link, the browser padlock is the first thing they look for. Is it? So fun fact, we will see in the future the padlock will disappear. And the reason the padlock will disappear is because secure will be default. So remember the sort of chronology of where we've come from. Go back about 3 years. It would have been, I think it was about Jan 2017. So if we went back to 3 years, just before this hit, every non-secure website had no visual indicator, either negative or positive. Every secure website has a positive visual indicator, which was the padlock, and Chrome, of course, is so secure. And we're going through this transition where so much stuff was insecure that that was the default. And the transition is moving through to the position where so much stuff will be secure. We've already got about 80% of all traffic over the web that is sent over an HTTPS connection. This is from the Mozilla telemetry. Go to letsencrypt.com/stats and you can see that. So we're moving to this transition where so much will be secure by default, we will get to the point where we won't need the padlock anymore. Instead, we'll get increasingly visible negative visual indicators, which has been happening already. That's why Chrome says not secure on every not secure connection, and it's been doing that, I think, since about October last year. So we're on a transition. So the bit about people looking for the padlock straight away, you know, A is crazy. No, of course they don't look for the padlock straight away. This tiny little grey positive visual indicator in the browser, they're going to pay much more attention to a larger, not secure message, which is still pretty subtle, mind you. They'll pay a lot more attention in the future as that starts to go red, and it will. Anyway, padlock means a given website uses a DV certificate to encrypt the transmission. Also, it means an EV certificate. Or an OV certificate, if you're in Chrome. And, of course, if you're in Firefox, it's about to as well. So it's basically every website or every certificate uses a padlock. this is so screwy. It's a big headline here. It's now virtually impossible in green, to know which websites you can trust. 93% of phishing sites display a padlock. So, you know, fun fact, over 80% of websites already display a padlock. So, you know. 40% of malware URLs display a padlock. 74% of illegal URLs display a padlock. I agree, get rid of the padlock. I'd be very happy just to see the padlock totally gone. Jeez, what's going on down there? I'd be happy to see the padlock totally gone and no longer have this ambiguity and we just start flagging the negative stuff that doesn't have it at all. Metasert logo on that image as well, just in case you weren't sure about where everything came from. Here's a heading. How free DV certificates are making the internet less safe. And the hilarious thing here, and this is one of the things that was flagged to me, is the guy says, I highly recommend that you read this amazing post, link, written by, and I'm going to come back to how he's explained, but written by Dave Weiner. Now, Dave has been a funny bloke as far as commentary on HTTPS has gone. He is, I believe Scott Helm referred to him as a flat earther in terms of his views of HTTPS. And he's basically convinced that Google is trying to kill the internet. And he's literally said that going towards HTTPS is a massive book-burning exercise. Incidentally, a bunch of his tweets around this have since been deleted. Scott and I have backups that we've been using in some of our talks. You got to have backups and stuff like this. You just never know when they're going to disappear. But just an absolute sort of encryption Luddite. It's just the weirdest thing. I don't see a lot of his stuff anymore because he blocked me after he got upset because I didn't know who he was. Now, who he was is actually interesting because this relates to another theme here. And I'm going to use the explanation from Paul here. He's written by the founder of podcasting. So a founder of podcasting, due credit to Dave for that as well, blogging and RSS and open web advocate. And a lot of the arguments here in favor of Dave and then Paul's own arguments in favor of him when he left comment after comment after comment on one of my EV blog posts was about how much they have done to somehow boost ego or status, and that is somehow meant to be the basis of which their argument is valid. Honestly, if anyone ever sees me doing that, let me know, because it is not a good look. I mean, imagine if I got up and said, here are all the things I've done. Because I have done all of those things, you should pay attention to what I'm saying. I'd much rather explain why the thing makes sense. And if I can't explain why it makes sense, then I need to lean on my profile instead. I've done something really wrong. Anyway, it goes on. There's a whole number of free certificates issued by Let's Encrypt. Everyone's always blaming Let's Encrypt. Which is funny, of course, because Komodo was issuing a lot more phishing certificates or certificates to phishing websites than Let's Encrypt until recently, and then Let's Encrypt got a lot bigger. So turns out that people doing phishing attacks also like free, automated, and open certificate authorities. So it goes on and blame Let's Encrypt. What's this headline? The volume of cyber attacks that use automatically issued free DV certificates has weakened the trusting computing base, TCB, of the internet, in my opinion, and free DV certificates are an existential threat to the safety and well-being of society. Holy shit. That's, woo. In 2017, Let's Encrypt issued more than 15,000 DV certificates that contain the term PayPal. Yes, you read that correctly, 15,000. Okay. Look, just, like, read it and take a rational view of it. It's just... once upon a time, there was trust. Now, to be clear as well, the baseline guidance for any certificate authority issuing certificates at any time is pretty explicit about padlocks, even EV padlocks, not meaning trust. This does not mean you can trust the site. It means you have identity, but identity doesn't necessarily mean trust. A lot of phishing pages we see stand up on domains that are otherwise trustworthy. They're legitimate services, but guess what? Someone didn't secure their admin panel. Now they've got a web shell dropped on there and they've got a phishing page on there. Hey, domain's okay, certificate's okay, but trust is wrong. So is trust is explicitly called out as not an attribute to imply from any sort of certificate, which is really weird. Why cyber criminals don't use EV certificates? You want to know why? Because they're expensive and they don't work. And they're hard to get. Anyway, how browser vendors are railroading everyone. Oh, here we go. To set the tone, I'd like to quote Dave. Oh, I can't even get this out straight. To set the tone, I'd like to quote Dave Winey. You know, that's going to be good. The web is an open platform, not a corporate platform. Oh, I remember this post. It was so weird. The web is an open platform, not a corporate platform. Okay. It is defined by its stability, 25 years plus and still going strong. Yep. Fair enough. We just had the 30th anniversary of the World Wide Web, actually. And remember, it was only like a week and a half ago, I was literally standing outside Tim Berners-Lee's office in CERN. So don't let that sound like that somehow makes my opinion informed, because I know what I just said before. Browser vendors are guests on the web. Now, browser vendors are not guests on the web. This is not how it works. Browser vendors make a client. Now, the client gets to work over HTTP and it gets to browse things. Just the language here is really weird, because then he goes on and says, guests don't make the rules. Now, he says, I replaced Google with browser vendors. So I think it was Paul saying this, because Dave originally said, and I remember this quote, says, Google, I think, is a guest on the web. They don't make the rules. Just the language is so weird. Look, it works like this. It's a client. You get to choose which one you want. Every client has the freedom to implement visual indicators in whichever way they see fit. It's not that they're a guest on the web or anything like that. They just simply work over the protocol that has been established, that is open, that is community-driven, all this sort of stuff. So I don't get this. it's just weird. And it's literally like a couple of dissenting voices arguing against just masses of volumes of clever people with heaps of research at multiple different vendors that have all reached the same conclusion, and somehow this warrants a blog post. But, you know, they got businesses to run. I get that. But still, what I learned, everyone has a right to an opinion. Okay, that's fair enough. Everyone has a right to have their opinion heard. This is why I'm here. Well-designed visual indicators work. Yeah, well, everyone has the right to their opinion, I guess, don't they? Why now? New browser indicators, deep dive into... holy shit. And then there's about Paul, and this is a little bit like the Dave thing. Here are all the things that I have done, therefore, you know. I just read it with a critical mind, and yeah, I don't know. It is just a weird thing. So that's that. That was what I read over my coffee this morning, and I just found it a very, very odd piece. So, lastly, sponsor, because I do want to wrap that up. This is just a rabbit hole that I'll go down and I'll just never come back out of. So, I should... Anyway, let's just leave it. If people want to take it up on Twitter, I'll point... You know what I'll do, actually? I'll link to one of the discussions with a bunch of people commenting on this, and it's just kind of crazy. New sponsor this week, brand new sponsor, Resistance DEX, privacy-focused, decentralized trading. You can go and download that now. So first time I've had Resistance DEX on there. So thank you very much for those guys for sponsoring my blog this week. I hope that you do go and check them out because they help me do what I'm doing here, which is fantastic. So a big thank you to Resistance DEX, and I've got to go and make sure I give them a tweet out right now as well. And I'm going to wrap it up on that note. So next week, as I said, I'll be in Sydney. I'll probably be recording this from another hotel room. I'll see if I can get it out on time, if I can get out on Friday. At least now that I'm in this part of the world and we're a little bit further ahead on the clock, I've got a bit more chance of getting things out on the schedule which I'd originally planned to do for all of these. And I don't have any kangaroos around to show you today, but that's it. I hope you enjoyed the update from this side of the world. And I'll come back from the side of the world again next week.